Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
David is co-hosting today with David Stearns, president of Dale Carnegie, Maine.
And today on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be speaking with Ken Lazotte, the founder of CareerScape and author of two exciting new books, The Speaker's Edge and Discover Your Dream Career.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And today I'm your host, David Chulo, and I am co-hosting with David Stearns. How are you, David?
I'm fine. How are you,
I'm
David?
Doing very well. Beautiful day here, always, always. Well, on the phone, we have Ken Lazotte. Ken has been on the HR Power Hour before. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, David. Thank you.
But I am calling you and talking to you because you have two new books, not one, two new books coming out.
Two new books.
Hard to believe. Right, yep. Hard to believe. They're both called, let's start with different names here. First, Discover Your Dream Career, using passion, creativity, thought leading, and fun to attain a work life you really want. Hey, by the way, Ken, I need to read this book. And then the second one is...
I'm just kidding.
I did read part through the book already. I'm just kidding. Second, the ultimate go-to guide for locating and landing lots of speaking gigs, The Speaker's Edge. Both great books.
Thank you.
And you know, you've talked about for a long time the advantages to speaking. And so I'm going to have David talk to you a little bit about some of the things that he looked at in the book, but kind of give us, if you would, just from the starting point, what prompted you to write this book and why is it something that you feel is so important?
Sure. But may I say before I get started that to be interviewed by two Davids makes me feel like my name should be David as well.
No, Ken, you can stick with Ken. It's okay. Yeah.
I did have a cousin named David.
That's good. Same thing.
I wrote The Speaker's Edge because I know how difficult it can be for people, whether they are starting out speaking or if they're veteran speakers, to find speaking engagements. And I also consider that a very, very significant, powerful way to develop your visibility and your word of mouth and to pick up clients and all of that. It's a very, very, very powerful marketing tactic, if you will. But there are no books that I know of that are out there that focus specifically on how to find speaking engagements. Most books are, you know, the whole ball of wax, you know, how to deliver a great presentation, how to set up a speaking business, and all of that. But how do you go and find speaking engagements? What I wanted to do is a thorough study of that in a complete, kind of a comprehensive look at how you can go about finding them and the implications of the various ones you might find.
That's great. So, Dave, I know you had some questions, some thoughts. So rack them up, as they say.
I really enjoyed this, Ken, this book.
Thank you.
I think it's something I wished I'd read years ago. To get me on
yeah.
to speak.
But that, David, that's what I mean. I've been looking for a book like this for years myself. Yeah. I also would occasionally join some sort of a speaker's support group,
right.
And I would do it primarily because I thought maybe I would get some leads for speaking engagements. I didn't feel like I needed speaking skills so much, but I couldn't find it anywhere. So, you know, it's like I had to do it myself.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. That's why Dale Carnegie wrote his book on how to stop worrying and start living. He couldn't find one for his class, so he wrote one based on the experiences in his classroom. So kindred spirit here, I guess.
I'd be lucky if my book has any success similar to his, that's for sure.
Well, there you go. That would be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was impressed with your, and maybe you could talk more to your emphasis on keynotes versus opportunities. I thought that was an interesting insight and would give somebody, you know, I could give somebody a jump start, I think.
Right. Well, I think it's very important, first of all, that people do realize that you can't just walk into a keynote. Keynote speakers are usually selected as people that are either very, very, very well known, or they've been around the circuit for many years, and they've been working their way up, and they've gotten to be really good speakers, and they've gotten to really hone their message. So, and obviously, in most situations, a keynoter has the only spot. There aren't 5 or 6 or 10 keynoters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very competitive. And what else is there? I think we all know, we've all gone to business events and conferences, and we know that there are panels.
Mm.
There are what they call breakout sessions or smaller workshops and things of that nature. And those, sometimes those are better than the keynote,
right.
In fact, because you might attract the audience that's exactly interested in what you're doing, as opposed to a more varied, dispersed audience that may or may not be interested in what you particularly have to say. So if you see this as a business development and marketing technique, then doing a breakout session or being even part of a panel can be potentially more valuable to you than being a keynoter anyway.
Right. What other areas in terms of focusing on the keynote do you think that, what if somebody is, and I say it this way in a nice way, what if somebody is trying to get into speaking? Can the keynote part be a little bit, what's the word I want to use, intimidating versus maybe starting out on a workshop first?
Well, I would think so. You know, we all, when we start out speaking, no matter how excited one might be or motivated to be a speaker, there's always that nervousness before they go on, and also, you know, the anxiety about how can I prepare or create a great presentation and all of that. So it's probably a mistake anyway to think of just going for the keynote too soon. You want to work your way up. I talk in the book a lot about how important it is to find venues that are low risk, so that you can practice your presentation as well. So, for example, what I like to do, having had a previous career in career coaching and career facilitation, which is what the other book, Discover Your Dream Career, is about, I got very familiar with job hunt support groups, people who are unemployed who come together and try to help each other out and come in and will hear a speaker as part of the meeting. And I have no interest in restarting that particular career, but I do understand that audience very well. And I'm not going to get paid, and I'm not going to get travel expenses or anything. But what I can do is I can try some things, you know, certain material of substance or certain jokes or, you know, certain exercises and things like that, that if they fall flat, I'm not blowing an opportunity, a business opportunity. And I think people need to find rotary clubs and small events of different kinds so that they can practice their presentation and eventually work their way up to the bigger slot, especially the keynote.
Nice.
When somebody is working through the process and they're saying, okay, I'm considering this, especially as we're talking to HR professionals out there, why is it so important for HR professionals to look at this? I mean, they don't necessarily go out and speak a lot, but they may speak to a group in the organization, a company. Well, why is it so important for HR professionals to get out there and speak?
Well, if for no other reason, for their own career. I think this is true of every business professional or expert, no matter whether they're entrepreneurs or if they're employees. I think it's generally true that nowadays there are very few people who get a job and with a company and stay there for 30, 40, 50 years, and that's the only job they ever had. Just the total volatility of companies. So what are you going to do to keep your career? You know, see, I'm kind of spilling over to the other book, but that's fine because there is a lot of overlap in this. Using entrepreneurial techniques to build your own value as a professional. So if an HR manager, let's say, was to go out and speak to local groups or local business groups, they can accomplish two things. One is they can spread the word about their company and what their company's doing and get some value for their company, but they're also in the process getting some value for themselves, getting some people to understand that they are top professionals in their field. And you never know if somebody is in your audience in a case like that that is thinking, you know, we could really use a new HR vice president here, and I wonder if she'd be interested in considering coming over to our company. And, you know, I mean, it can be even a sort of a job hunt tool as well, including when, for example, say you're not even employed and you're looking for a job. Why not go out and speak to groups about topics that you're knowledgeable about? Who knows who might be in the audience that might come your way, rather than you always having to file applications and resumes.
So, Ken, if someone has just discovered or has gotten some feedback that they're pretty darn good at this, what would be two or three things that you'd coach them on to get started in a speaking career?
One of the things to do is to set up some preliminaries. A video is important these days, not necessarily a video of an hour or an hour and a half presentation, but at least a 2 or 3 minute video so that meeting planners can see, you know, what your presentation is like. Gone are the days that I can still remember when meeting planners would want to go out and physically see somebody before they made a decision about bringing them on to speak. So because of video, they don't have to do that anymore.
Well, Ted, so that's what really made TED Talk such a big deal today.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, video is exploding in so many areas of society, but that's one thing that I think is important to have on your website. And you should have a website. You should have, if not a dedicated speaking website, just a dedicated section of your website that showcases you. The other two things that are really important in the beginning in terms of preliminaries are, what are the topics that you're going to speak on? What's the expertise that you want to display and that you want to communicate? So you need to create, I say in the book, that you need to create a speaking topics list. And then the third piece of that is a target audiences list. So what kind of groups do you want to speak to? And from there, it just begins a Google search more than anything else, seeing what you can find in terms of groups that are out there that you could then send a quick brief email to a meeting planner, if you can get the name, proposing a few topics and a little bit of your bio. So those are the things that one can do to get started, in addition to what I mentioned before about going out and practicing.
In the book, you talk about the best-kept secret syndrome.
Right.
What exactly, how does that work, really?
The best-kept secret, well, I think you're referring to the best-kept secret trap that has to do with how you might be very valuable, professional, or expert, but who knows about you except your clients who love the work that you've done for them. And in order to break out of that, there are a number of things you can do, and they all have to do in my overall thinking of becoming a thought leader, which includes potentially publishing articles and publishing a book and that sort of thing, but also getting out and speaking. And, I mean, there's nothing like being on a stage where you're talking about a topic that you're an expert on and knowing that most or all of the audience, at least at that moment, cannot think of anyone else who is an expert that they know on this topic. You become what I call the thought leader right then and there as you're delivering your presentation. So that's when you explode this idea that you're a best-kept secret. You stop being a secret and you get the word out and you get the message out that you have some expertise in a certain area.
We're talking with Ken Rezat. He's an author of the new two books, The Speaker's Edge and Discover Your Dream Career. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates.
Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Join the Northeast Human Resource Association at their annual conference from September 28th through 30th in Falmouth, Massachusetts. See why the NERA conference is sure to be 2.5 days of HR education you won't want to miss. With awesome keynotes, you'll be sure to leave Falmouth with new resources and key knowledge to support you in your career and earn up to 15.5 SHRM and HRCI credits. Register now at nehra.com or by calling 781-235-2900.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. Today, I'm your host, David Chulo, and our guest host is David Stearns, and we're on the phone with Ken Lizotte, founder of CareerScape and author of two great books that we're talking about today. Ken, we talked about the first book, The Speaker's Edge. Today, second book we're going to talk about is Discover Your Dream Career Using Passion, Creativity, Thought Leading, and Fun to Attain a Work Life You Really Want. I think the key word is fun. That's in my world. That's what I like to do. Have fun. So, you know, one of the things that I've been really looking at in terms of the book is there's terminology that means something. And so what exactly do you mean by a dream career? After all, no career, no job is perfect, is it?
Right. It's a perfect question. By dream career, we do not mean a perfect career. Perfect career is like nothing goes wrong, everything's great, every single moment is terrific and exciting and all of that.
Wasn't that your life, right? Perfect?
It was and it still is. That's because I'm on podcasts of this sort.
Yeah, of course. Very good.
But it's not about perfection, but it is about your dream. What's your vision? What would be your dream place to work or type of career to have? And it doesn't mean that you can just slide right into it. There are steps that one takes, and it could take years to really get there. But at least you're on your way. You've got that sight. You've got that vision in front of you. So a dream is like, this is hard work. This is tough, and I don't like this. I don't like this guy down the hall that I don't get along with. And there's all those kinds of things. But on balance, this is where I feel like I want to be. It's the best fit for me. Overall, it fulfills me, and there's some fun in it too. So that's what a dream career is.
So why do you think so many people accept jobs that are, well, if you would want to call it, less than what their dream job is, other than I would initially say, you know, it could be financial, but what are the reasons other than financial?
Well, financial is a big one. You know, the pressure obviously from finance, from needs of income obviously can push you in that direction. Any job hunt can be frustrating anyway. I'm watching my daughter now who just graduated from college struggle with the challenges of looking for a job, and she's got herself focused on a dream career and even a dream company, but she can't just walk right into the company. But that's not just about discovering and seeking your dream career. That's about any kind of a job hunt. So the frustrations can really beat people down. I recognize that. And they can get people to a point where they just feel like they got to take a job. They got to take any job. But I would say this, that even if you, in a sense, let your dream career search down and you take a job that doesn't feel like your dream career, I don't think that means that that's the end of the story for you. I think that there's a lot that you can do off the job. You know, I'll give you an example. Suppose that you had some background in finance and you knew you could get a job, or you just got offered a job in finance, but you really didn't want to be there. You really wanted to be in HR. What could you do if you're stuck in the finance department? Well, there's a few different things. You could, for example, get to know the HR director at your company that you're at. You could become a member of an HR society that meets on nights or on weekends, or you could attend conferences and that sort of thing. You could watch TED Talks on HR, you can read books and this and that, and self-educate yourself, and a lot of different things. And that way you start to build up your HR expertise so that you can move out of the finance world eventually into at least an entry-level position in HR and then move yourself up. So it's the challenges and the pressure and the difficulties of looking for a job, whether it's a dream job or not, that cause people to give up. And I think that if my words here can help somebody out there stop giving up, then this podcast has done some good.
So a situation like this, so you've got a job, you feel you're on pretty stable career path, you're considering a move, and what would be a couple of mistakes or misassumptions you might make when you're considering a career move?
The first mistake is to think you can't make a career move, that you're stuck. Even if you've been in a particular area for 20 years, you think, well, that's all I really know. Nobody would ever take me in a different field. So you need to know that that's just simply not true. The second is you have to, and it's along the same vein, you have to stop self-censoring. You have to stop assuming that you can't either make a move or develop new skills or develop new relationships. Aligned with that is the understanding and the confidence you have to have that people can see you in a different way. I think I tell a story in the book about the author of the book, What Color is Your Parachute? His name is Richard Bold.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've read that book.
Yeah, now that book's been around since the 70s. It gets reprinted every year, and it still sells millions of copies. Well, he used to do a seminar where he would tell people, he'd give people an assignment on the second day of the seminar to go out for lunch, but not to come back until, let's say, 3 o'clock. They go out to lunch, and then after lunch, he wanted them to walk into a building, presumably a high-rise office building, where there was a company that they did not know a thing about, and they could feel that they did not want to work there. But to do an informational interview, just to pop in, and this was in the days, by the way, before
when you actually could, right?
But, I don't know if he could pull this off now. But anyway, he would say, we don't want you to look for a job. We don't want you to ask for a job. We don't want you to offer your resume. We want you to just do an informational interview to learn about the company. So people were very skeptical that they could pull this off, but and they'd go out. And time again, his workshops, 80% of his attendees would come back having been able to do this, to have an informational interview at a company they knew they did not want to work at. They were not trying to say that they were there to work at it. They just wanted to learn about the company. And 80% of his attendees were able to do this, and 20% of those 80% were offered jobs. Now think about that. And I tell people the story. I said, well, maybe the people thought that they might be good to work there because the person wanted this job. And I said, no, they were not supposed to want the job or communicate that at all. It's just that you can be sitting there with someone, you can be with somebody else, and you can see characteristics and qualities and abilities in a person that transcend any job. And you could be thinking, I need somebody here in my office. I think this person would be really good at that. And you're not even interested in the background. You feel like they're trainable, their skills are transferable, they'd be good people to work with. And that kind of result tells us all that we have more ability to change our careers than we might give ourselves credit for. And you ask, you know, what do you do to kind of get started and what are the mistakes that people make? The biggest mistake is assuming you can't make a career change.
So how do you get yourself out of a rut if you've talked yourself into it? I mean, you're like you said earlier, you said, hey, I'm too old. This is no one would ever be interested in that. And so you're kind of talking yourself down. What's a practical thing you could do to?
You got to get some other people with some more positive voices talking to you.
Ooh, okay.
You got to change that conversation however you do it. And there's a multiple ways of doing it. Again, TED Talks nowadays, we used to have to go out and look for motivational speakers or videos, but now with TED Talks, we can just sit in our home and we can get inspired and we can get positive talk and motivation and encouragement. We need to surround ourselves with people who are talking more positively. Again, if we were looking at changing our career, as I was saying before, let's say finance to HR, and I think I mentioned that finance person should go to an HR organizational meeting and surround him or herself with HR people. Now that person's going to start getting some advice in a positive vein as to how he or she could move eventually into HR. So the positive inputs start coming your way. You can't sit home and stew about it and just feel like you're so right that you can't do anything, you can't change anything. You got to have some other talk out there that's encouraging and comes your way. Hiring a career coach, by the way, is another thing I should mention. A lot of people came to us over the years with the same lament that they couldn't really change their career, but they just were not fulfilled anymore in the career that they had. So when I was running CareerScape, my job was to help them see a different way of looking at things. And we particularly ran a program that had a dozen other people involved working with each other. And so it wasn't just me as a career coach giving that advice, but it was other like-minded professionals that were all trying to make a change and boostering each other. So get that input that you're not giving yourself and change the conversation in your head.
Okay.
Ken, thank you very much. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Join the Northeast Human Resource Association at their annual conference from September 28th through 30th in Falmouth, Massachusetts. See why the NERA conference is sure to be 2.5 days of HR education you won't want to miss. With awesome keynotes, you'll be sure to leave Falmouth with new resources and key knowledge to support you in your career and earn up to 15.5 SHRM and HRCI credits. Register now at nehra.com or by calling 781-235-2900.
And we are back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. I'm David Stearns, your co-host, with my other co-host, David Chulo, and we are speaking with Ken Lizott, author of two recent books, The Speaker's Edge and Discover Your Dream Career. So welcome back, Ken.
Thank you. Thank you.
Ken, I was just curious. You must have met a lot of, experienced a lot of career changes or people who have made career changes. Could you speak to one of, without names, one of the more radical examples of somebody that completely turned a career around?
Well, I can think of a few that come to mind, and some of them are very radical. Some of them are not radical per se, but they were just the right adjustment to move themselves into a dream career versus one that was not. One of them that comes to mind that's a little more drastic and radical was, I'll use his first name as Carl, and he was a very high-priced lawyer in the Boston area who had a hobby, and his hobby was, even though he was making $500 an hour as a lawyer, when he was in his off time, he liked to, believe it or not, weave afghans, weave sweaters. He had a loom, and he just enjoyed it so much. And as he came to us and he spent some time with us, he started to see ways that he could actually change his life. And it had to do with the fact that his two daughters were now out of college, so he didn't have the college bill anymore. And he and his wife talked about it, and they sold a townhouse that they had in Charlestown, Massachusetts, which gave them a pretty nice profit after a number of years of living there. Bought an old house and farmhouse in Vermont, moved up there, and set his loom up on the porch, the front porch, and gave up his work as a lawyer and became a full-time weaver. Now, he understood that he wasn't going to make the same amount of money that he was making as a lawyer, but he was much more fulfilled. He didn't need as much money anymore. And he was able to make that kind of transition, and he's been up there for many years as a result. So that's one thing. I'd like to quickly say there was another client whose first name is Kathy, who had been an engineer for 15 years. Her only real job, her only real career after college. And while it was a terrific job at one of the major engineering firms in the Boston area, she had always had this idea that she wished to be a doctor. And it kept squelched when she was a kid, and for just the idea maybe that as a female she shouldn't be a doctor or whatever. And she had it pushed down. As she went through our program, she decided she was going to give it a try. So she was around age 35, 36. She took the medical boards. She passed the medical boards. She applied for medical school. She got into medical school. And, again, that was a number of years ago. She graduated, started her practice. She's been a family physician for the last 10 or 12 years.
How old was she at the time that she made that career?
At the time when she got out of college and started to, do a residency and all of that, I think when she really got fully accredited as a doctor and underway working as a doctor, she was in her early 40s.
Okay, so she was still in a mid-career. Have you seen scenarios where people who are looking for what I call their final career, somebody 55, maybe even 60 years old, and says, hey, I still have 5-10 years left, and I still want to be productive, I still have my energy and my health, and I want to make that happen, but as you know, it is a challenge for, especially in the corporate world, though not as much as it used to be, but still there, there is a little bit of age consideration when people are hired. And especially in today's day and age, with technology being something so very, very important, and unfortunately some of the challenges are that they're not as tech-savvy in their older years. That's not always true, but we have seen that being an issue. How have you seen, or a scenario where you've seen that, where somebody has been able to mount that challenge, even if they are 59, 60 years old?
Well, I have seen it, and I think the way it happens is typically to take yourself out of the most conventional way of looking for a job, which is to be submitting resumes and to be, have a situation where you're up against, as you say, the younger people that are more tech savvy and this and that, and to be more involved in an informal relationship building and conducting what I call career conversations. A little bit of a departure from the informational interview, where that's something that's an appointment, and you're just going for, information like the story I told earlier, but more of a two-way street career conversation. So here's my story on that one. He was in his mid to late 40s. His first name was Jim. And he had been running a Minuteman print shop franchise that he just didn't want to do anymore after 20 years or so. But he wasn't sure what he wanted, actually. We had an exercise where we asked everybody to spend some time thinking about dreams, just wild, far-out, crazy dreams. It could be dream careers or just dream ideas, but a whole list of 100 of them if they could make it. So he did this, and the first, number one on his list was that he liked the ocean. And he said to himself, what the hell can I do for this, with this? I like the ocean. But he said, maybe I'm telling myself I should drive down to the ocean and see what kind of companies are down there. So he did this, and he drove down to the south shore of the Boston area. And he started noticing these companies, but he didn't know what they did. So he took the names down, and then he went home, and he started just calling them, just out of curiosity. So long story short, he ended up being invited, having a great connection with one of the vice presidents at an engineering firm. He got invited to come down and take a tour and this and that. They ended up hiring him after a number of months of this back-and-forth conversation that they had and research that Jim did because of problems that this company was wrestling with and didn't know how to solve it. A job came up that, with Jim's background, it's what are the skills that they started to notice he had, what are the characteristics, the determination, the stick-to-itiveness. So in his early 50s, he got hired by this engineering firm, had no engineering background before at all. But this is the kind of interaction that can lead to a job that otherwise you would have to compete with 50 or 100, you know, other resumes, and you just wouldn't make the cut.
You know, it's interesting. It can be done. It just takes the will, right? It takes the ability to network properly, because it really is about, and I've said this for years, and you know that, you know, we've had these dialogues, it is about who you know. And it's about the willingness to have the dialogue and provide a discussion with somebody to really share what you do. A resume is great for getting in front of people to break in the door when you don't know them. But it really is about the people that know you and can help you find your career path, find what you're looking for. Do you see that still being as true today as ever?
It'd be more true today, definitely, but it's an evergreen thing. I mean, what do we do as entrepreneurs? What do we do as people who are in business for ourselves? We just automatically assume that we're going to go out, network, build relationships. You know, you guys are doing a podcast. I write and publish books. We do different things in order to reach out to the relationships that are out there that can be formed. A lot of times people get very insulated when they're an employee. They just come to work. It's that best-kept secret again. They come to work. They do their job really well. Nobody knows really what they do. Sometimes even their families don't even know what they do at their job. So they become a secret. But the more you get out and you use some of the techniques similar to what I say in the other book, The Speaker's Edge, go out and do some public speaking, do some writing, create your own podcast, you know. There's a lot of different things that you can do that create relationships so people see you as the dynamic individual that you are rather than the list of past jobs that you've done that are on your resume.
Yeah, no, it's always going to be the case. I agree with you 100%. It's about the ability for people to understand that you're more than you possibly could be on a resume. And really, it's about people believing in you, right? And taking that time to listen and digest. But you have to be compelling. You have to be a little bit of a storyteller, right, to be able to keep somebody engagement. So as you were looking and writing this book and looking at tips and things that people can really do to get to that career, what do you think are some of the key things that are takeaways when you're at that point of making that decision that somebody can say, okay, I am going to do this? What are some of the key takeaways to do at that point?
The key takeaways for the job seeker?
Yes, for the job seeker, yes.
I'm going to go back to what I said before. The first thing you have to learn is not to censor yourself, to know that there are possibilities, and not to be the one that's holding yourself back. And then you need to have the support of those who will keep that positive self-talk going with you. And then the next thing, you mentioned at the very beginning of the program about fun. How can you make this fun? Notice the story that I told about Jim. What was the exercise? The exercise was not make a list of 100 jobs you could do. And because as soon as you do that, it goes, you go down. Your motion goes, oh, God, I don't know. What job could I do?
Yeah.
We were trying to open people up to their creative selves and to the fun that you can have and the using your imagination. So the assignment was a list of 100 far-out dreams. Just have fun with it. Who cares what it means? And that was how Jim was able to seize on that, number one on his list, and move from there and just go down and just sort of look. Here are some. I'm driving around the ocean. I love the ocean. What is this company? I don't know. Curiosity. And then conversation. And the worst thing that can happen is somebody doesn't really want to talk to you. But the best thing that can happen is that if you attempt to talk to enough people, they will welcome you in. And one thing will lead to another. This guy, Jim, said we had him come on a panel of our graduates once to talk about what, you know, their own experiences of how they had gotten where they are. And he said, you know, if I had tried to compete for this job with my resume, such as it was or is, they would have thrown that out. And at the end of the whole story, when he got this job, he said to them on the first week that he was there, he said, you know, you guys never asked for my resume. I do have one. Do you want it? And they said, give it to us. We'll put it in a file.
It's really
so much, you know, what you do with yourself more than anything else in order to achieve, discover, first of all, and then to attain your dream career. And I'm not trying to say it happens overnight, but it's all about whether you hold yourself back or you let yourself go forward.
Good, Ken. Could you speak to, I notice in both books there is some print on social media, and it's interesting in your Discover Your Dream Career book on page 189, it says how social media can help, parentheses, or hurt. Could you speak to that for a minute?
I think that's in terms of hurt, I think it can help because any new channel like we have now with social media can help. So why not use it? In my own business, I'm a big believer in using email as opposed to Twitter and Facebook in getting the word out about where I'm going to be speaking or in our book I've just published or this podcast or any of that. But what I would also do with the email e-blasts is send those out over social media because there are a lot of people that do go on and check their LinkedIn and their Twitter and this and that, so why not use it? But it can hurt when that's where your emphasis is. That should be an adjunct to all of the rest. You know, I mean, I leaped at the opportunity to come on this podcast because I know that there are a lot of people out there to listen to your podcast, and I would never be able to reach them if I was just tweeting out these thoughts. So that kind of interaction that we have is very important, and for some people, they're losing the importance of that by thinking that they can rely on social media only, and rather than just using it as a supplement.
Well, thank you, Ken. We're glad you said yes to be with us today.
Glad I said yes, too, even though my name is the first name isn't David.
Oh, right, right. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM, 100.5 FM, and WLOBradio.com, and we'll be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Welcome back to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAKorea.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. I'm your host, co-host, Dave Stearns, and my partner over here, David Chulo.
Hello.
And we are talking with Ken Lizotte, author of two new books, Discover Your Dream Career and The Speaker's Edge.
You know, it's interesting, Ken, I just happened to Google The Speaker's Edge, because I wanted to take a look at something on the cover. And I noticed there are two books called The Speaker's Edge, and one is not yours.
Right. We don't want people to go for that one. We don't want that.
We won't talk about that. So if someone Googles, they have to add your name, Ken, or something to get this specifically.
Right. Thanks for pointing that out. Yeah, Speaker's Edge Ken, or Speaker's Edge Ken Lizotte, or my name will get you to the right book. The other book is a fine book, but it's not what we're talking about. It's not a book that focuses on speaking engagements, so per se. That is to say, looking for speaking engagements. So the ultimate guide is what you're looking for. The Speaker's Edge, the ultimate guide.
Sure. Well, you know, as we wrap up this show today, we have about 4 minutes left. What is one piece of advice you could leave with our listeners who want to get either their dream career search launched or kind of want to be speakers? I mean, what are the tips of advice, that one key piece of advice that you want to leave our listeners with?
Keep in mind that in both cases, you want to step out of the conventional wisdom. In the case of the Speaker's Edge, the conventional wisdom is that speaking engagements are for people who like to do speaking, or speaking is a scary thing to do, and I wouldn't be any good at it, and what would really be the point of it anyway, and that sort of thing. But you step out of that insularity, and you learn to go up there and speak to a group. And you learn through my book how to find those kinds of opportunities, then, as I said earlier, you become the leader in your field to those people who are in that room with you. So stepping out of the conventional wisdom that, you know, that's not for you, that's for other people, is important to keep note. In terms of discovering your dream career, again, I've talked a lot in this podcast on not censoring yourself. And the conventional wisdom is to have a resume, do the best job you can with the resume, look for opportunities, job opportunities, and file your resume. This is the worst way you could do it, because you're among so much competition. So stepping out of that conventional approach and learning to conduct career conversations, which I explain how to do in the book, and learning how to build relationships, learning how to have fun with the process. I mean, what? Have fun with job hunting? That's the kind of thing you have to do if you want something different from those people you see around you in the workplace or in your marketplace. You've got to do something different, and that's my biggest message, is step out of the conventional approach and do something different.
Great advice, Ken. Where could I go if I wanted to learn more about CareerScape, your company?
You could go to my website, which is at thoughtleading.com. That's thoughtleading, thoughtleading.com, and we have a CareerScape section there. But the best thing you could really do is to pick up a copy of Discover Your Dream Career, because our whole program is laid out there, and it's a workbook of sorts. It can move you through the process without having to attend a formal program. And that would be the best way to learn more about CareerScape.
Awesome. Well, Ken, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I think, you know, these two new books, I wish you the best success with them. I certainly will have them on HRPowerHour.com right after the show. Of course, everybody can come and listen to the show again if they want to capture certain parts of it. And, of course, podcast it wherever they wish to podcast it, because we're getting out there and we really want to make sure that this information gets to everybody. Also, people, we will have links to your book on the site as well. Ken, thank you so much for being on the show. We appreciate it. Dave and I have enjoyed this conversation.
One last question for you,
sure,
guys. I've been on your show before, David, and before I only had one book to talk about. So next time, do I need to have two or maybe three?
Actually, it's going to require four, because we have four segments to the show. And that way we can
talk about... And three Davids, maybe?
And we'll have a third David. We'll get another David in here to make that happen. Actually, we'll bring in Debbie, my producer,
and
Debbie
Dan.
Davis. And Dan from my office. We'll get four D's for you, okay?
4D.
Ken, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, guys.
And you've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM, 100.5 FM, and WLOBradio.com.
And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VerylDana.com.
This is Elizabeth Kennellan-Smith with VerylDana. Most states maintain that an intoxicated employee is not entitled to receive workers' compensation benefits if he or she is injured on the job while intoxicated. However, the term intoxicated is not defined under most state workers' compensation laws. So what is intoxicated for purposes of this defense? In general, an employer will have to conduct post-injury drug testing to provide proof that the injured worker was intoxicated at the time of the injury. Coworker testimony regarding the injured employee's appearance and behavior is also helpful in securing the defense. Keep in mind that most states also require proof that the intoxication was the proximate cause of the injury in order for the defense to be successful. What this means is that a successful defense will also show that it was the state of intoxication and the related behaviors, increased risk-taking, lack of balance, for example, that caused the injury. For more information, contact VerylDana's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VerylDana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have a great guest. His name is Adam White. He's a national speaker. He's an author of the book, A Leader Others Will Follow, The Power of Influence. He's going to talk about leadership and team development. He's going to talk about the 7 tests of a great leader. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m., or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.